Hey, how many car shows does the world really need? And is Ford really interested in improving fuel economy or in just deflecting criticism? And everything that you could ever want to know about the new Chevy Impala.
Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone. Your journey, our passion.
This is Autoline After Hours with John McElroy, episode 189 for March 29th, 2013. World-class cat throws on the brand new Chevy Impala. Watch Autoline After Hours live at autoline.tv every Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time or 2200 GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Autoline in iTunes, Stitcher, or by following the links on our website. Mr. D.
John, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good, man. Yeah, you've been traveling some. You've been to Sebring. You've been to the New York show. We'll have to get into some of that tonight.
Gary?
And then we got to say hello to Gary before we do that. Gary Vasilash from Automotive Design and Production Magazine.
John, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good.
Peter?
So what have you been doing in the last week?
Staying home.
Oh.
It's been great. Haven't gone anywhere.
Oh, my gosh.
It's fantastic.
You just took the week off?
No. I've been working, but I didn't go anywhere to do anything.
Okay. No travels.
No travels. That was...
So, Peter, would you like...
Sebring was awesome, by the way.
Yeah.
It's the last before the two series get together, Grand Am and AMS.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a merger. It's Jim Franz wrote a check for the AMS, and it's over.
So it's an acquisition.
Yes, it's an acquisition. The Audis were running against themselves. I think they basically use it as a 12-hour test for Le Mans. And as I wrote in the site, if you can win at Sebring, you can win anywhere because it's the roughest racetrack in the world.
Everything. Not just the cars, the drivers.
Everything. By far the roughest racetrack in the world. I mean, they'll come off the ground if you get offline on the back straight.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Hey, but Corvette pioneered some interesting technology there, right? This augmented reality for their rear view cameras.
Yeah.
That shows cars coming up and what side they're going to pass you on. And what I really liked is in the rain and at night, where when multiple cars are coming, faster cars are coming up on you, it's hard to distinguish how many cars there might be there because all you just see is, you know, the big flash of headlights. So pretty interesting technology. We're going to have a report on that coming up on Autoline Daily, I think, next week.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, and Corvette 1 GT, hotly contested. The most competitive racing of its kind in the world. So it was cool. And I love the Z28 at the
New York
at
show.
The show. I mean, you know, the coolest thing about it is it was built for really hardcore enthusiasts, like the bus.
It's a track car.
Yeah, like the bus Mustang with Laguna Seca. But one of the coolest things is there is a radio in it and with one speaker just to qualify as such because you have to have some sort of warning.
For the seatbelt.
Yeah.
For the
It's one speaker radio. And if you want air, you got to check the box.
Yeah.
And it's 300 pounds lighter than the ZL1, which...
That's a lot of weight.
Yeah, but the ZL1 is heavy, but still.
It's about 2,800 pound car, the Z28.
Is that right?
Yeah.
No.
38.
Okay.
Yeah, I was going to say,
if it was
20. It was very funny because I was checking the number yesterday and I got an email from someone at Chevy and they said 28. And I said, 28? Or do you mean 38? And then he goes, oh, my. You know, because he sent it on his phone.
The ZL1 is 40.
And I thought, you know, so I just made his mistake. So,
yeah.
Mea culpa.
But speaking of lightweight, I was impressed by the stats on the new Cadillac CTS.
Very.
They made it
impressed.
A much bigger car. You know, 5 inches longer overall. That's a lot longer,
lower, and lighter.
And lighter. And now what they're claiming is, I think it was 200 pounds lighter than a
528. That's significant.
That's very impressive.
So lightweight is the new black.
Well, lightweight is, you know, it's it's engineering by gunpoint, basically. I mean, they have to embrace lighter materials because that's the quickest way to bring mileage.
I still go back to the ATS. And yeah, they are doing some interesting things with materials, but it starts with just good basic design.
Well, yeah. But, you know, is this going to be enough to change Cadillac's image? I mean, Cadillac seems to be stagnant at a certain level in the U.S. market. That's a big debate because they're doing good things. They have cool cars. They've got a nice lineup. The ATS isn't selling all that well. All that well.
But if you look at the trend lines in terms of the sales of the ATS compared to the CTS, the ATS is actually going like this as the CTS goes like this. Now, the question is whether you have recovery on this end from the CTS or whether you have the same sort of scenario that Buick is facing with the Verano versus the Regal. I mean, the Regal's like doing nothing, right? I mean, and the Verano sales are going north. So is the ATS Cadillac's Verano? That could be a problem.
I still think it's too early to say with ATS. They have a bigger mindset or perception to change. Cadillac does. When you're out against BMW, Audi, and Mercedes, and even Lexus. But I still say Cadillac's biggest problem is it just doesn't have enough crossovers. In the luxury segment, that's the hottest thing right now. Cadillac has two. It's got the Escalade. I know there's variants of the Escalade, but it's got the Escalade and the SRX. Meanwhile, Audi's got four crossovers. BMW has five. Mercedes has six. And when you see the hottest thing going is crossovers and Cadillac's two against four, five, and six, that's the biggest hole in their lineup right now.
Well, is the new Escalade going to be in Lambda architecture? I mean, I saw one on the Lambda architecture in the black hole inadvertently. I wasn't supposed to see it.
Just you looked the wrong way at the wrong time,
just or like I was
the right way at the right time.
Just like I wasn't supposed to see the finished sedan version in silver of the CL, which is gorgeous, gorgeous car.
What else at New York struck you guys? Anything else jump out?
Well, you know, I thought it was interesting that, you know, there were things like the Z28, and then Shelby showed the Raptor.
With
575 horsepower, because 411 of the stock just isn't enough. I mean, you just need more. And, you know, and it just sort of seems bizarre to me, you know, to your point of how many auto shows do you need? Like, why would you show those cars in New York?
Well, didn't they also show their 800 horsepower? Or is it 1,000 horsepower Mustang?
Yeah.
1,000 horsepower.
Yeah. But I mean, why that venue? I mean, wouldn't it make more sense to do it, I don't know, Los Angeles? Or?
Well, one brewing fistfight is Mercedes and Audi. Audi showed the A3.
Right.
And which is in S-line trim with, what's it, 330 horsepower? Or S3, whatever, was just like, wow. And then Mercedes showed the AMG version of the
CLA,
and it's just like, is this the new black?
Yeah.
I don't know, but I mean, those two German companies are hell bound on beating each other.
And doesn't it seem bizarre that they're showing the AMG and like the regular one isn't even out yet? I mean, for the U.S. market.
I mean, I still think the Germans get together in a bar somewhere and just say, Vivo compete here, right? And, you know, and they just decide, yeah, let's do that. You know, it'd be fun if that was the way it happened. But they always seem to be coming out with stuff. Now, you know, they show the new Porsche 911 GT3, mm-hmm. which, you know, what's not to like?
Right. Yeah. But again, that was shown at the Geneva show.
Yeah.
And that gets back to this whole discussion. How many auto shows does this world need?
Because and what's coming up now? Shanghai?
Well,
yeah.
The Seoul.
Yeah, there's Seoul.
Seoul's
going on right
is
now.
Going on right now. Same
right.
time as New York. Shanghai is coming up.
There are too many.
See, but if you were a dealer, you know, you'd want the Farmington Hills Auto Show. I mean, you'd want every possible auto show you could have. Every community would have its own auto show.
Well,
high school gym, you know, you just roll cars
in. I agree with that. But, you know, from a media standpoint, I mean, how much can you cover? So many of the cars at New York were refreshes. And, yeah, you got to be aware of those, and you do got to report on them. But, wow, to to have a whole auto show media frenzy built around a bunch of refreshes is
is it truly a media frenzy, or is it basically that there are so many media outlets that cover this because there are so many people in their basements who are doing this now?
Well, it's also New York, where they have to drive a few blocks to let's go cover the auto show.
Mm-hmm.
I like the European thing where you have Paris one year, Frankfurt the next.
Well, those are the biggies, but then there's Geneva.
There's Geneva, and then there's Detroit,
Tokyo.
Tokyo's almost fallen off the map now.
Right.
And, you know, Japan's a victim of its own policies. They've so successfully prevented foreign automakers from participating in that market. Everyone's going, well, why should we have an auto show there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And L.A., you know, California, largest.
Well, look, we're talking about the big ones. There's lots of other shows all over the world going on.
Well, there's
on
regional shows all over the U.S.
True, that too.
The Cincinnati Auto Show, the Pittsburgh Auto Show.
Washington, D.C. is trying to pump themselves up into a big deal show, but it's basically just a political.
Well, that's the big environmental show. So all the green cars go there. And but, I mean, I could see. So Hyundai rolls out with the updated Equus. Okay, so that makes sense. You show that in New York, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's.
But to your point, a Raptor with over 500 horses, what's that doing in the
city? New York? Yeah, it just doesn't make any sense to me. It's just like crazy. Why do they do this?
That's a real interesting thing, though, is what happens really to Shelby American with Shelby gone? Will anyone really care? I mean, Shelby
was the man.
Was the man, but he had contacts at all the car companies, at the highest level. And it was his presence. I mean, he was the straw that stirred the drink. And it's going to be very interesting if they can sustain it. I don't think they can.
That's a hell of a good point.
Speaking of sustaining things, I saw that Fisker had a stand at the New York show.
Yeah, but now they're...
Well, they must have paid for it last year.
I mean, it's just like, what's
because
that?
Because they're about to file bankruptcy, right? That's the latest report.
Well, it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, they furloughed all their U.S. workers to save cash. Well, they're not building cars. No one's running the company. I mean, I don't know how you raise money in that kind of environment unless it's a fire sale.
But the best news, John, you had today... on Autoline Daily, lo and behold, after months and months and months of the great and powerful Sergio saying that we will never sell Alpha, over my dead body. You fill in the quotes here. Alpha is the thing we're gonna put our stake in the ground, and it's going to be the future of this global empire of mine. And, oh, by the way, we will never sell the Volkswagen. And what's the news today that they're talking?
The rumor out of Italy is that Audi is going to buy Alfa Romeo and take one of Fiat's plants, Pomigliano, and Magneti Marelli, their big electronics in-house supplier, and maybe up for sale, too. Now, having said that, both companies are denying it, but... Ward's is saying, no, these are very reliable sources out of Torino and out of Germany.
Because Sergio needs cash, or they're not going to be able to buy the rest of Chrysler.
Right.
So I just think I mean.
So, but I mean, doesn't it seem that you would sell some other assets besides something like Alfa? I mean, don't they have Aveco or something, a commercial truck?
Yeah, but Aveco probably makes good money. Alpha loses money.
Yeah.
And that's what it's all about. And to Peter's point, Fiat needs cash to buy Chrysler. They don't want to borrow it, you know, although they might have to borrow some. Number two, they got to keep feeding the product pipeline. You know, look at some of the Chrysler stuff alone that's been delayed and Fiat stuff that's been delayed because they don't have the cash to put it in the pipeline. Some of the Chrysler stuff has been rearranged as they try to take advantage of things like the new Durango or the refresh and the Jeep Grand Cherokee. But I would also say the collapse of the European market is another reason why Sergio needs
Yeah. And, you know, but it'll be interesting to see how the media covers it. If it goes through, it'll be interesting to see how Sergio gets the soft glove treatment, or he just says, never mind.
So what happens then to the aforementioned Miata? Isn't that the
current? Never mind.
Well then, but doesn't that put Mazda in a bad spot?
Possibly, but to think of it, what's Alfa worth? I mean, it's nothing right now.
So why sell it?
Oh, you got 8C Competizione and what else?
Well, here's the other thing, too. Think of inside Volkswagen, because remember, Seat was sort of tasked with the job of taking on Alfa Romeo. Seat's not making money. Not making any money.
So maybe they will drop Seat name and just call them Alfa Romeos.
Right.
But, whatever. Sergio's grand plan is just augering into the ground at this very moment.
Well, I'm not sure I'm ready to go that far.
You heard it here first.
Right. Hey, a couple of other things that we ought to get to is this, I thought, fascinating speech that Jim Farley gave in New York, where he was talking about the post-Great Recession mentality of the consumer and how Ford sees that changing. And the other thing that I found interesting is they're doing this app challenge, fuel efficiency, I can't remember the exact title, where they're going to invite hackers, essentially, to hack into their connectivity platform, hardware and software, develop apps that people with Android devices can mine data out of their car. The thing that Ford wants them to do is teach them how to optimize the fuel efficiency of their hybrid and then go in the cloud with that, share that with others. And Ford wants to start touting that fuel economy, not what's on the EPA label. And I find this fascinating on a number of different levels.
Well, they've already announced that they had opened up their platform for development several months ago. I mean, this thing has been open and it's out there for a long time. So basically Farley's going, okay, we're going to start crowdsourcing. Okay. So we're going to crowdsource this information and we're going to get people involved in that. And that way we'll look good, right? Because we're asking people to do that versus not looking so good in terms of, you know, the results of Consumer Reports found for vehicles, right? You know, and it's just like it's the going thing. I mean, didn't the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation just crowdfund a new condom design? So you know, what the heck, it's out there, it's happening now. I think it was $100,000 for that.
Well, Ford's given $50,000 for every app that it accepts. I think that's how it works. I shouldn't say every app.
I didn't think it was every
prize winner.
I thought it was a prize winner.
Yeah, I thought it was an app that
$1,000 prize,
and it's for somebody who develops the app that then will be applicable for, you know, getting this and for having the best driving behavior or whatever you want.
But they are opening it up to other app developers too, because one thing that they said is, why don't you create a digital painting of your steering wheel turns through the course of a day? You know, that i.e. you can tap into the steering sensor signal and use that to paint a picture, which is crazy, but I like how they're stimulating crazy ideas of things that you can do as an app developer or as a user of the car.
Which sort of begs the question of, what do geeks drive? And I'm not so sure they drive Fords.
Maybe this will help get them to...
Possibly. I don't know. But, that's a question that I would certainly ask.
What I find so intriguing about it is, to your point, Gary, Ford's taking it on the chin. I mean, they're hybrids. They just don't match the EPA label. The small displacement EcoBoost engines don't match the EPA label. So to me, they've come up with this brilliant PR/marketing move to say, let's move the conversation over to this crowdsourcing and app development.
So what did they have at New York?
Nothing.
So they had Farley's speech, right?
They had the Mustang Lounge, the 50th anniversary.
Right, but no new car or anything
The 50th anniversary of the Mustang's coming up, so.
So what does that say?
I think it goes back to our conversation of, how many new car shows does this industry need? I think Ford looked at it and they just went, you know, we don't have anything really good, or the timing's not right. Well, so Let's have Jim give the keynote.
Detroit is the global show. Chicago is the people's show. New York is the media show.
L.A.?
L.A. is...
They want it to be the design
the biggest
of the show,
damn market in the country show.
Right.
You know, and after that, it's regional shows.
Did you get a chance to see the Cherokee in the flesh?
The Cherokee is... I don't get the hand-wringing over the front end at all. I think it looks good.
My problem's with the rear end, not the front end.
Well, the front end is, I think, looks good. And then it's like, again, you know, it's the designer's just sort of taking a coffee break when they get to the V-pillar and coming back like 3 days later and finishing. Like, just like we talked about last week, I don't get it. I really don't get it.
It sort of looks to me, it looks to me like a Jeep designed by Spacely Sprockets. You know, and it's just...
Well, I'll wait. You know, we've always said this. Let's wait till it's out on the road amongst other traffic, and then you get the real impact of what the design really
is. But it sure as hell doesn't look like a Liberty.
Well, that's, you know...
I think that's a good thing, myself.
You know, that is correct, because looking at anything under the show lights doesn't do it justice. I remember when I first saw the A7, the Audi, I said, you know, what's the big deal? Then I saw it on the road one morning.
I remember you talking about
turning
it back
and
then.
You know, coming this way, turning from me and accelerating away. I was just like, wow, okay, I get it. But under the show lights, I don't know what it is. It's deceiving as hell. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't get a feel for the road stance. You just don't get a feel for the vehicle until it's out on the road.
Yeah.
In natural light.
So I got to see a Liberty out on the road amongst other cars.
Cherokee.
Or Cherokee. Then I'll know what I really think.
Anything's better than the Liberty.
Yeah.
So
I agree.
No.
Hey, why don't we take a quick commercial break?
Well, that's true.
What? What'd you say?
Patriot. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Let's not go there. Let's go to a quick commercial break and get Todd Pollack on the show here. So Todd Pollack, Chief Engineer on the Impala, welcome to Autoline After
Thank
Hours.
Thank you very much for having me to allow me to talk about the new 2014 Chevrolet Impala.
And you brought one along that we've got in the studio here, which is cool.
I promise the designers did not stop at the B-pillar when they designed the exterior.
Yes, I know.
When's this go on sale?
They will be in dealers in April. They are
right around the corner.
Right around the corner.
Cool. Now, what I find fascinating, and this is something that Mark Royce said, is... This is really the first Impala in several decades that was designed for real retail customers and not for the daily rental fleet customer.
Yeah, this one absolutely was. It's a tough segment. The full-size segment is extremely tough. So the focus was to separate ourselves. Our attempt is to do it through styling, to make it beautiful on the outside, to get folks to want to come, get in it, make it beautiful on the inside, offer features, safety features, heated steering wheel, cooled seats, content that doesn't play real well in the rental market.
Who do you see as you know, you say the full size, who do you see as your main competitor? Taurus or
if you look from North Dakota down to Texas, for sure it's the Taurus, right? You get to the coasts and you get into the
Avalon.
VW, the Avalon, the Hyundai Azera. You know, that they're
Chrysler 300, that a competitor.
You know, it's a rear-wheel drive and kind of plays, I think, in a different niche of the market. We're more headed toward the main slice of the segment.
And the company's going to continue building the old Impala. Did I get that right?
Yeah, we're going to do that. We're focusing these immediately on real customers, right out to the retail, and let the old Impala cover the rental fleet for a while, right? Mm. We're going after
that's got to hurt, though, having two different Impalas on the market.
Yeah, both internally and externally, folks have done it. So we'll sell the old Impala as long as the rental fleets will take them. It allows us to focus the new Impala on the customers. And there's a lot of demand, so it works. It's a great business opportunity right now. We've got dealers lining up with orders, so we'll satisfy those. In the meantime, we'll sell the old Impala to rental fleets.
Are you going
to
change the name, like... When they took the Malibu name off the Malibu and just called it the Classic?
We're going to leave the Impala name. We are going to add Limited. It's going to be the Impala Limited.
So how long have you and your team been working on this car? We always like to give our viewers an idea of about this business and how long this takes.
Call it 3 years, plus or minus. Right from I've been on the program the longest of any engineering folks, right from we started putting lines on paper you know, trying to decide what we want it to be, what were our wins, you know, how are we going to execute. So,
where did you come from before this assignment?
I was the engineering manager on the Buick Enclave. So I've been graced with two beautiful vehicles to lead the engineering team on.
Yeah, and John Cafaro's group did. He led the design team.
Yeah, he did. John, you know, it was great to work with John. Could walk around and point to a lot of different parts, you know, from the what John and I all call the cat throw, the distance between the tire and the fender. And we've got
the cat throw.
Where the cat would get thrown into if you
I've never heard that.
So
is this an engineering problem, you guys? Do you have a test?
I love
you
this know? Terminology.
So, you know, we worked, John and I, together to make sure, we've three-size tires, 18, 19, and 20.
Three-size tires.
And made sure the OD was all within half an inch so that in the side view, you know, all you have is 6 millimeters or a quarter of an inch difference between the 18 and the 20 in that distance up. So, you know, trying to make the base vehicle look as beautiful in the side as the up-level vehicle.
And how did you guys do that point, the gap in the cat throw? That's as narrow as I've ever seen on a GM vehicle.
So we had criteria, and then we reverse engineered. We set the criteria, went out and tested with, you know, the good thing about being off of an existing architecture, right? The old Impala, let's step back, is off the very old W car architecture. The new Impala is off the global Epsilon architecture.
You know, which also underpins the XTS.
Correct, XTS, the LaCrosse, the Regal, Malibu.
Different wheelbases.
Different wheelbase. So the good thing is you can take and from a chassis perspective, you know, we took an existing chassis and fine-tuned it instead of starting from scratch, which allowed us to focus on other areas. But in doing that, to answer your question, allowed us to focus on that distance, right? So we could take an existing vehicle off the architecture with that chassis, clay it up, put the tires on, and make sure that we could minimize that distance. So there's
it looks great. I mean, yeah. There's almost, in fact, I'm just sort of looking at the, you know, ahead of the A-pillar there, there's almost a lot of Camaro in the look of that there.
Yeah, there is.
Well, there's also a reason that, GM pioneered this, but there's a reason designers like to see their cars in silver, because you see the lines of the car when, you know, that's why.
Right.
And you can see them in the studio here. So.
Yeah, it gives a good shadow. This just happens to be the car I was driving, so no smoke and mirrors there.
Now, how many suspension iterations do you have?
Just one. You know, our whole strategy was one car, do it well, do it right. So there's a McPherson strut front and a four-link rear.
And so the different wheels and tires, are they part of packages or?
Yeah, we somewhat. The LS model comes only with 18s. The LT is standard 18, optional 19, and the LTZ is standard 19, optional 20. So, And trying to keep it simple and keep it good to help improve quality and reduce complexity, all the options are in packages. So the only free flow content at all is a sunroof on the LT model. Everything else is in a package, and they have names, but in order to get package 2, you have to get package 1. In order to get package 3, you get package 2 and package 1. So it cut our build combinations way down and allowed us to focus on executing a great car.
So being the engineering guy, and we're just talking about Cafaro, mm-hmm. right? So there had to be at least one thing that you guys went around and around about.
I'm sure there were more than one thing.
Yeah, so just give us an example.
So, but the good news is, John, and I love him dearly, we always worked it out. You know, and I never felt like I compromised, right? We always, what was best? We had a vision. The vision was to make it beautiful. It makes it easy if that's your vision, right? And so the front end is a challenge with the hood. We'll call it a trapped hood is the terminology. You can't slide it fore and aft. It has to be exactly within 2 millimeters every time you build it. And that gave John the look he was after, and it was a real challenge. But so did we have some debate about it? Absolutely. But did we sign up and go execute? Absolutely. Because it
didn't matter. So would this be a case where you'd want a larger gap? I mean,
well, if I could walk it over the car, you want to have a cut line that goes straight rearward so you can slide the hood when you go to adjust it. You can slide it fore and aft. Trapped hood means the line doesn't allow you to do that. It physically is trapped. It can't go forward.
You better stamp it perfect.
Better engineer it perfect. Better stamp it perfect. All the fascia and all the other parts better go together perfectly. So
there was a little tussle there.
Yeah, it's a challenge, right? So, but I'll tell you, in all honesty, when you have a vision, the vision is to make it beautiful, right? That was, what's our reason for being? If we don't set this car apart in the market, in this full-size market, and there's plenty of competitors, then we don't succeed. So you set that vision, and then, you know, the conversations are about how are we going to make it work, not why it can't work.
So what's the power in it?
So the there's three engines. We're launching with the V6. It's 305 horsepower. It's the high-feature V6. We eked a couple more horsepower out, so we'll proudly say it's the highest power normally aspirated V6 in the segment at 306 horsepower. And then there's a four-cylinder, a 2.5 liter that comes out a month or so later, and it's just under 200. And then our E-Assist model, which you're familiar with from some other global Epsilon executions.
And what defines the LTZ? I mean, why would someone want that? What do you get?
Well, a ton of standard and additional features. So if we start from the front, HID headlamps, LED, the signature LED, DRLs, wheels that are unique to it, the chrome molding on the body side is unique to LTZ, the chrome, what I'll call skull cap on the outside rearview mirror is unique, the chrome door handles are unique, and then inside there's unique leather and unique features.
Is that piping in there? Is that part of it?
Correct. And the seats are heated, but you can also get cooled. There's wood trimming on the steering wheel. There's ambient lighting that is standard on the LTZ to a greater degree than is even available on the LT. So I know where you're going. You know, there's not an engine that differentiates it. And we didn't want to do that. We wanted the customer who was really focused on fuel economy to be able to get that and still get a beautiful car. So we made the engine more like an option than a standard feature for a model.
So is the 6 the standard engine?
And the LS, the four-cylinder, is a standard engine.
So
if you want to go that way, the base engine is the four-cylinder. We're launching with the 6. We're launching with the LT and LTZ model with the 6, which we think most customers will select the 6. And so trying to do it once, you know, do it right, do it great, we launched with our high-volume engine first.
Mm-hmm. What's the reaction been? This styling is dramatic compared to the current designed car, which isn't a bad car, bad-looking car, but this is. There's far more sculpture in this body.
Yeah, there is. And, you know, we were out west recently, had the press out to San Diego to drive the vehicle, and there's nothing better than one of the writers stop at a stop sign or at a construction zone and have the workers walk around the car, have a checkpoint near the Mexican border, have those folks come and start walking around the vehicle. I mean, that almost writes the article for us, right? And we get a lot of that. And I've been driving these for several months, and still every day somebody pulls up next to me and I get self-conscious, like, did I cut somebody off? And no, it's just somebody looking at the car. So it's been tremendous.
It's I think an amazing design thing is that the rear deck lid looks so small and that trunk is so enormous.
It is.
It's really a nice job.
Yeah, and that's, John and that's John and I working together, right? Make the exterior it looks small and have the flowing shape, and it worked great for Aero. And then on the inside, just absolutely maximize the trunk space because, again, this maybe I didn't mention it on camera here, we think a full-size segment is really for the driver and some occasional passengers, right? We've looked at the data, and the midsize market has more passengers in it in a vehicle, right? Count on your way home tonight. You'll find the midsize vehicle have kids in the back more often than the large segment vehicle will. So where I'm going is it's designed around the driver, room for large passengers in the rear, and four golf clubs.
So I mean,
or four golf bags.
Historically, the Impala, I mean, in addition to being a rental car, has been known as a sales guy's car because it has room for passengers and it has for stuff in the trunk. I mean, did you take that into account at all in developing this car? I mean, nobody wants to admit that, but
no, I mean. Let me tell you, if enough salesmen come with enough money, we'll sell them all the Impalas that are able to buy. So we certainly didn't rule them out. That wasn't our focus. I mean, it was somebody, my age, 45 to 55, who's, aspirational, wants a great-looking car, wants the ability to haul stuff. I've kind of moved out of the SUV stage of my life. I like sitting lower. I like to be able to corner a little bit tighter than I used to be able to. And, the kids are older now and don't need easy access to them. So really designed for me.
This car is going to be built in two plants, is that right? And
correct.
Why that?
Just to give us flexibility.
Oshawa and Detroit?
Correct. Oshawa, which is just outside of Toronto, and Detroit Hamtramck. And if you look at the products that are made on the assembly line, it just gives us the ability to be flexible. And once you have one of the vehicles off the global Epsilon architecture, which we did at both plants, Well, then the ability to put it in this vehicle in both those plants doesn't cost much money at that point, right? When you already have a global Epsilon. And then what we can do is flex. So we've got the XTS in Oshawa and the Camaro in Oshawa, and those sales come on. You know, the new version of the Camaro, the new model announced yesterday, got a lot of attention. So that sells. Okay, we can shift volume to Dehem. Well, you know, the Volt gas goes up to $7 and Volt sales go up. Well, we can shift volume back to Oshawa. So it's a pretty inexpensive way to build in manufacturing flexibility.
Did you have any idea how competitive the full-size segment was going to get when you started off doing this car? Because 3 years ago, you know, as we talked about earlier, you know, the Avalon was a real snooze. You know, the Maxima was going nowhere. The Azero was nothing like what the new one is. It's just impressive to me how serious so many different car companies seem to be taking the full-size sedan market.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the two for sure, the Azera and the Toyota, the Avalon, right? From where when we started, where they were to where they are now. Luckily, we had some good internal prognosticators and kind of knew where the market was going. So I think we absolutely shot far enough in advance. You know, the Azera came out, looks great in the exterior, and like you said, the Avalon just made great strides and is a reputable competitor now.
Mm-hmm. And talk a little bit about more about the interior, because I'm really impressed at how good it looks. One of my litmus tests is actually getting in the back seat and looking at the seams on the backs of the front seat. That's where everybody cuts costs. Boy, you just go down to these ugly stitches. You guys got a little bit of that, but you've also got these beautiful French seams that you look at on the back of it. And talk a little bit about what your thinking was in making the back seat area look a whole lot better than really so many other different cars out there.
Great question. So as I mentioned, we think the vehicle is focused on a driver, right? Somebody who loves to drive, who's going to take occasional adult passengers in the rear. So, okay, now the mindset is an adult rear passenger. So, you know, no plastic kick panels on the back, no rear seat audio. We want to have nice materials, very nicely finished, nice comfortable armrest, no flip fold anything for toys, because this isn't about that. Nice shoulder room. You know, we did some tricks to maximize shoulder room. Adjustable headrest in the back, just to make it very comfortable for adult passengers. And that goes into the appearance as well, paying attention to the door. You know, there's ambient lighting on the LTZ in the rear. Just really focusing on occasional adult rear passengers.
Well, let me ask you something. You mentioned that this is the same global platform as is used for the Malibu. So if someone hears that, they're going to say, wait a minute, this is an Impala, but it's a Malibu too. Could you explain the difference, the things that you did to make this car, rather than making this car a Malibu?
Absolutely. So let's start with the 4-inch wheelbase difference. So that stretches the wheelbase. There's 3 or 4 more inches than trunk. So the vehicle, even though it's off the same architecture right away, appears larger.
And people should realize, you know, when you say, oh, it's 3-4 more inches, in automotive terms, that's a
right.
Huge.
So you're adding
huge.
Yep.
You're stretching this thing.
So rear of the rear tire, there is 3 or 4 more inches, depending upon where you cut the section and measure it. So right away, it looks different. You add a larger tire wheel lineup. Now it looks even visually more different, right? It's we've got a V6 offering where the Malibu does not, and that separates it. We also took trying to make. You know, we're on an architecture, so the track width is fixed for all these vehicles. So how can we make it appear larger? So we took the IP and stretched it out all the way to the what we'll call the B&R flange, all the way to the door seals. We added about an inch, so it visually looks longer and wider. So there's visual tricks that John did on the exterior, and Crystal Windham, our interior design director, did to make the car look larger. And then just by virtue of the 4-inch of wheelbase and the 3 or 4 inches of trunk length, engine and tires, all of a sudden you get a car that also looks.
I mean, it's I mean, from the inside, I mean, from driving it, I mean, it seems like a much bigger car than the Malibu. So physically it is, and then on the interior, I mean, you guys did some serious tricks on the insides there, because it you know, when I was told that it had the same width as the Malibu, I was like, I can't possibly be the case.
Yeah, so one, it, There's absolutely one of the advantages of coming off an existing architecture is you take some components off the shelf that are good, you refine them maybe, but then you focus on the other stuff, right? So we were able to focus on making the interior seem larger. We were able to focus on the exterior design. We didn't have to focus on the front and rear suspension or on the engine because we use existing
content. In fact, talk a little bit about the back door locks that you talked to me a little bit about before the show, because I think that indicates how you got the spaciousness or the appearance of spaciousness.
Absolutely. So you know, a typical large or midsize sedan, you'll walk up and you'll notice the rear lock rod is visible from the door you're walking up to. Problem is that's right in the shoulder space, right? So there's been a conscious decision that's important to be seen, even though on almost every vehicle the key fob is standard, so the ability to see whether the door is locked or not isn't typically critical. So what we did is take that and move it rearward into the what we'll call the C-pillar trim on the door and put it in a little alcove and then allowed us to pick up an inch of, a little bit more than an inch of rear shoulder room.
Which is gigantic. Which is gigantic. Again, in automotive terms, another inch of shoulder room.
You know, if we'd have kept it where it was and moved it out an inch, then we would have had to play with the exterior design, right? And then we'd be back talking to John about how are we going to make this work. But instead, we looked at how can we make this larger in the interior without impacting the exterior. We did that by moving the lock rods into a dead space and made them chrome. So when you walk up to one side of the vehicle, you look across to the other side and you can see if they're up or down. Plus, we have a standard key fob, so we haven't really taken anything away from anyone. We've provided an extra inch of rear shoulder room.
Is there anything on this car that is on the previous generation?
The engine is the same, although we eked out a couple more horsepower through our electronic power steering system. So that's it.
That's it. And transmission is completely?
That's a six-speed. It's the same six-speed. So I'm sorry, powertrain, engine, and transmission.
And that six-speed will be used for the four-cylinder engines
Correct.
As well?
Yep.
Hey, why don't we get to the rapid-fire part of the show? I know we got a bunch of questions coming in from the audience right now. So, Ben, let it rip. Okay, Todd, we got a bunch coming in fast and furious. Okay. Olds 98 wants to know, why don't you offer a front bench seat on this car?
You know, again, we were focused on doing one iteration and making it great. A bench seat would have traded off a bunch of things. We would have to add mass to every vehicle. And so by making buckets with the center console, we were able to focus on making just one great.
I love bench seats, but nobody buys them anymore.
Nobody buys them.
My mom has a 2005 Impala, which I just happened to be driving the other day. Bench seat. And she thinks cars that don't have bench seats have manual transmissions. Literally.
Okay, Jay Cujo says, can I get the Impala in green or bright blue like the Encore?
It is not available in green. It's available in a blue. I don't know if it's the same blue on the Encore, but there is a
dark blue, right?
No, there's a lighter blue you just haven't seen yet. It's with a two-plant strategy, some plants build some colors and others build others. So it comes in a rather bright blue.
George from Brooklyn wants to know, did the GM bankruptcy affect the development of the new Impala?
Well, there's no doubt that it delayed this generation Impala.
I think it's true to say across the board.
Absolutely.
There's been a number of things. I know Cadillac's just getting an 8-speed now. I know that was part of the bankruptcy, why it didn't have it a year or two ago.
Yeah, in all fairness and honesty and transparency, without a bankruptcy, we would have had a new Impala sooner.
Yeah. He also wants to know, did consumers or focus groups have any input into the design?
They absolutely did, and that's quite frankly typical of all of our new vehicles. We go through both an interior and exterior clinicking process, and that's even adapting more. You know, we take the clay models and do some on-site adaptation based on feedback from the clinics.
AAH guest 664 says, what's Todd working on now that the Impala project is done?
Todd is still working on the Impala project.
Uh-oh.
No, we've got three powertrains. We were launched with the V6. We've got a four-cylinder, then the Eco model, and, year two and year three content.
How much lighter is the four-cylinder than the V6 one?
It's, call it 150 pounds.
Well, that'll affect the handling. Hey, we've got some phone questions coming in. Ben, let's get to the first one of those.
This is Troy from Mississippi. There is a rumor in a recent edition of the Truth About Cars website that Ford is considering discontinuing the Taurus after the current generation. I just wondered if you all have heard anything about that and what your thoughts are. It would make the Fusion Ford's sedan flagship. Thank you.
What are your intelligence people that told you where the Acerin
is? I would love if they did, because that would be several thousand customers that we think would come our way, and we hope to steal them away anyways. But I have no reason to believe, unless fuel prices go out of the roof, that the large size segment's going anywhere. In fact, as we mentioned earlier, given the resurgence of the Avalon and the Acera, it's clear that both GM and our competitors are focusing more money on the large segment.
You guys got any thoughts on that? Ford dropping the Taurus?
It seemed bizarre to me.
It would seem bizarre to me as well. Let's see. Here's a long one. Rick Tavell says, as a longtime Corvette owner and enthusiast, I was recently disappointed to see that GM's Halo car, after decades of being the top performance car, lost the title of King of the Hill to the 2014 Camaro Z28. Sounds like not only in horsepower, but also on the track, the Z28 will outperform the Stingray. If the new LT1 is the best thing since sliced bread and the new performance platform, then why did they not offer it in the Camaro?
That's not true. I mean, the Corvette is 700 pounds lighter. There's no way. Move on to the next one.
C.P. Hopewell says, do any of you think the Cherokee front end, particularly the headlights, are channeling the Aztec?
No.
No.
I think maybe the rear end. VRM Chris.
CX-5. Look at the rear quarter, the way it comes. CX-5.
CX-5? Mm-hmm. Okay. VRM Chris says, should Cadillac try to match the volume of the German luxury makers or figure out a maximum amount and stay there to keep some level of exclusivity? That's a good question.
Well, I think their strategy to go against the Germans is good for aspirational reasons, and it forces them to do better cars, but they're never going to go toe-to-toe in the Germans with all the niches and segments that the Germans just seem to crank it up whenever they feel like it.
And no publicly traded mass manufacturing company is going to limit its production.
They're not, but I think where he's going, maybe, or where I would be going with the question is, Cadillac doesn't need to come out with a B-class car, a C-class car. There's other, they don't have to go down market. Maybe they should do a B or C-class, but it should be hyper expensive, way more expensive than anything the Germans are doing. They don't have to go down market, I don't think. You know, BMW's got Mini, full stop. Daimler's got Smart, full stop. Audi's part of the VW group. I think Cadillac should definitely remain as exclusive as it can get.
Well, the problem for Cadillac is, you know, the lingering image for Cadillac is based on people basically over 60 years old. They have to have all those people die off. And that's why they're spending a lot of money on younger, targeted, younger exposures to the Cadillac brand, which is smart. But the transition could take years upon years. I mean, so they got a tough row to hoe, and it's going to be a long time. They do need the top Cadillac. They do need the CL, the sedan version of the CL, whatever they're going to call it.
You know, and the question becomes, as we see CLA A3, okay, as you have companies like Mercedes and Audi going into the smaller vehicles, Johann de Nyschen announced that they're going to be coming out with a smaller car that will be below the Q50, a.k.a. G35.
37.
So here you have these companies saying, you know, we need the volume. We need to have, and oh, by the way, fuel efficiency matters as well. So if Cadillac doesn't go in that direction,
so what are they going to do? Do a Cadillac version of the Verano?
I think that'd be a huge mistake.
No, it'd be a mistake. I think to be competitive in that market segment, they need to have something that competes with these companies, so they don't become an afterthought.
I would agree, but they don't have to go down market. Let Buick take that.
Oh no! I mean, you would have a premium luxury small car,
mm-hmm.
Well, that would be below ATS.
Yeah, the problem for GM, like we've talked about, they cut these divisions, but now they're cannibalizing, you know. Where's Cadillac going to go down market where Buick already, Buick's already there. GM's got some issues.
Yeah.
No doubt about it.
Hey, Ben, we got another phone call. Let's bring that in.
Hey, John and Peter. This is Auto Freelancer from Flemington, New Jersey. Just want to say I've been watching you since the beginning, and great show, guys. But I have two quick questions. John, I heard you briefly say that Ford might be making a $10,000 car. If so, is it destined for the U.S. market, and what's the deal with that? And second question is, did you guys ever hear of Factory 5 kit cars? They're going to be coming out with a car called the 818, a mid-mounted kit car, mid-mounted engine kit car. Do you know if any of the automakers are going to be doing something wild with making an affordable mid-mounted kit car, or actually mid-mounted car anytime soon? That'd be great to know. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Not aware of it.
I'm not aware of that. I'll definitely want to check into it, though. And mid-mounted engine, no, because they're trying to commonize platforms. I don't see them going with a mid-mounted one. As far as the $10,000 car, I think that's more for developing markets. I think it'd be almost impossible for a Ford Motor Company to build a 10,000 car meeting all the U.S. emission and safety standards. I think this is more for maybe even Europe, you know, to compete against the Volkswagen Up, which is in that 10,000, maybe not dollar, but 10,000 euro range. But that's something everyone's focusing on because Renault has a sub-brand Dacia that is fairly inexpensive cars in the emerging markets. And that brand is going crazy good right now. It's doing really well for Renault.
Who would have thought a Romanian car company would be on fire?
Yeah, that's right. But that's why Ford is now looking at this $10,000 car, and it's not the only one. Honda's got a new architecture that it's working on for a very low-cost car. I'm sure there's a bunch of others doing it as well. Let's see. What else do we have for you here, Todd? Let's see. Does the Impala have adaptive cruise control?
The new Impala does have adaptive cruise control. It's actually full speed range, which we're very proud of.
What do you mean? That'll bring you to a full stop?
Yeah, absolutely. So first off, it's the first Chevrolet to have adaptive cruise, and it's full speed range. And some of our competitors, not to be named, cut their systems off at 20 miles an hour. We think they do that because the noise, it get very noisy if you don't do it extremely well.
Is that because of the...
Yeah, it's like the old thing of the late 1980s, early 90s, you know, the firing of the ABS system. So you have to do it really, really well. But when you do it really well in stop-and-go traffic, it'll take you all the way down to a stop, and then you push resume, and it'll start you up again. So
that's the best. I like driving like that.
Yeah, so do I. You get very used to it.
Glenn E. wants to know, how about a turbo for this, for the four?
You know, no turbo for the four, or for the four-cylinder, and you guys, you know, touched on a little bit. So strategically, if we have a six-cylinder that has the horsepower and torque, to take a four, a turbo four, it just doesn't play well for a couple of reasons. It's costly. The power tends to overlap, and then fuel economy, maybe during the EPA test, it's beneficial, but depending upon driving habits, as you know very well, the turbo doesn't always provide what it's claimed to provide. So we think a really good strong four separates from the six. You can pick power, you can pick fuel economy. The V6 also has 1929, so good fuel economy. The four almost has 200 horsepower. So the reason we didn't, long answer, we think the natural separation is a V6 with the four-cylinder, and the turbo overlaps too much.
So there's approximately 100 horsepower difference between the 6 and the 4, correct?
Correct.
So how does this perform with a 4 in it? I mean, does somebody take a nap before they get to 60?
You're like, I can't wait to get you into it. It performs very, very well. In fact, you know, we knew that was the challenge coming out, so we very focused on making sure that's not the case. And so we'll tend to put people in a car and not tell them what engine it is, and often they're surprised to find out they're driving a 4-cylinder.
Of course, you know that motor that's showing up in the new CTS, the new twin turbo motor. Gee, do you think that's going to only stay in the CTS? No. Do you think an SS version of this car a couple years out with that motor might be good? Maybe.
No SS plan. We think that market's best served by Chevy SS, a rear-wheel drive V8.
And people are telling me they should have called it the Impala SS, not Chevy SS.
Ooh, interesting. Yeah, in fact, Wright Knight had a question very similar to the turbo question that just got answered. I hope that got your answer there, Wright Knight. Eric Ambrowskiewicz from Hamilton, Ontario, also says he can't wait for the Impala SS version. He says he was checking it out at the auto show. Two words, aggressively quiet. I kind of like that. He says, one thing I noticed, though, are thick window seals made from this Velcro-like felt material that was catching all sorts of hair and dust.
I can't comment on that specific incident. So they're, you know, triple door seals that start in the quiet, so acoustic front glass, acoustic front side glass, which is, you know, until a couple of years ago, traditionally only in the luxury market, and then triple door seals. So the door seals do have felt, as all door seals do, so they don't catch and slip and stick. And sure, could any door seal that has felt catch hair on it? That's certainly possible.
So triple door seals and thick door glass, it's got to be pretty quiet inside.
Absolutely quiet. You know, we won't make the claim to be the quietest in the segment because that takes a third party, you know, independent third party, but...
So but you'll tell us you are.
I'll tell you, we're at the very top of the class, right? So we're right there, and we welcome the competitive drives by the auto mags.
What's the difference between this thinking about quiet and the Buick? Is the LaCrosse basically dimensionally this car?
The LaCrosse is dimensionally wheelbase and track width this car. Trunk, we're longer because of the rear trunk. It's all about set your noise target, right?
So are you quieter?
I'll say this: the Buick noise target is to be more quiet, and so they achieve that through some of the same things we've done, and then maybe go a little bit farther with some additional acoustic treatments. But no, we're not trying to play in that segment. It just adds cost, and if we try to be as quiet as a Buick. Yeah, that cost, and then you have to price yourself the same as a Buick.
You can have active noise cancellation for the 4, right?
We do. No. That's really a fuel economy play, though. That's
really?
So we do that so we can lock the torque converter clutch up at a lower speed to improve fuel economy, and that leads to lockup boom. So ANC. In fact, almost anyone in the industry who uses active noise control is doing it for that reason. So it helps you with fuel economy, and then once you've got it, you can tune it to some other frequencies. Hmm.
We're going to step back for Impala for this one question. I'll throw this out to Gary and Peter. Are you guys surprised Toyota? This is from Brian. Are you guys surprised Toyota approved the Lexus LFLC concept for production?
Well, the LFA just went out of production, so you need something, right?
I think they were a little shocked at the reaction to it, how much people really liked it. So good for them.
I just hope they can keep the production car as close to that concept as possible because there's some real sharp edges front and rear that I think might be hard to do from a crash standpoint. But that car is beautiful in my book.
So they've got those Takumi who that work in the plant there. That might be a problem.
Excuse me there. Hey, we've got some more phoners. Ben, let's bring one in.
Hi, guys. Jonathan out in New Jersey.
Right, Jonathan.
Quick question. Jeep Cherokee. Is that going to be going to China? Is that where that design is headed? And is that a design that that you feel that country will like? And also the same question with regards to the new CTS. Will that be going to China, and will the Chinese market find it more appealing than the very sharp-edged art and science? Also, one last question, all-wheel drive V6 twin turbo CTS second year with the 8-speed automatic, yes or no? What's your guess? Thank you.
I think the Cherokee's going to Toledo. No, I mean... I think that car is basically a modern interpretation of what a Jeep can be, and I think that what they want to do is expand Jeep as broad as they can and to say, okay, let's rethink what a Jeep should be. And I think that it would not be at all surprising to me if we see something within the next few years that almost looks more like the Eagle Summit. Remember that car? Four-wheel drive car
but you know, higher
higher ground clearance.
Ground clearance.
All wheel drive.
You know, and so I think they're going to try to go in that direction with that car. And will it go to China? Of course it'll go to China. Everything will go to China.
Everything will go to China, Jonathan. Jeep is probably Chrysler's strongest, not probably, it is its strongest international brand. It's a brand that resonates everywhere around the world. They've got great opportunity to grow sales. I think they did about 700,000 vehicles globally, including the U.S. last year. Their goal is to hit 800,000. Mike Manley, who runs Jeep, hasn't said it on the record. I know his target's 1 million units. They got to get there. There's nothing that should stop them. So, yeah, that will definitely get there. What were some of his other
CTS
questions?
CTS going to China?
CTS, yeah, absolutely. Boy, Cadillac's got a lot of catching up to do in China. It's way behind the Germans there. But that's a huge opportunity. And the new car being longer, that's more rear seat room, that's a big thing in China. Lots of rear seat room.
Yes.
So, well, let's see here. We've got, okay, hey, John, Peter, and Todd, Reno here. Congratulations, Todd, on the 2014 Impala. It's got a great shape. My brother, who hasn't driven an American car since college, a 70 Nova, he thought it was pretty well done. So that's all a
great
good thing. But he goes on to say, I've always loved Coke bottle shapes of the Impalas from 65 through 70, which had the W front ends and covered wheelhouse arches. Any thoughts of that for your car?
You know, I don't think we looked at any particular Impala, and John Caffaro is the right guy to answer this, but working a lot with John, I think what Impala meant in past years was just a you know, there was something about it. There was a beautiful flow here. There was a feature in the hood there, right? There was something artistically on the exterior that attracted your attention. So I think, in general, whether, you know, we didn't go after one particular year of Impala, but more of the heritage and the and what Impala meant and has meant over the years. Just an aspirational car. I heard a great analogy. It's back in the day, the Impala was you know, the car that maybe the fire department chief drove when he wanted to drive, you know, a luxury vehicle without looking you know, pompous to his neighbors. And I think maybe that's a good example of what we went after. Just a sharp-looking car, but not after any particular year of Impala.
It's a Chevrolet. Let's Chevrolet. Make
Chevrolet
sure
Impala.
It's a Chevrolet and going after Chevrolet customers.
Correct.
Or type customers, because you want to steal them from other brands.
We absolutely intend to.
Ben, we got another phoner. Let's bring that one in.
Hey, John. It's Frank from Bridgeton, New Jersey. And I also love the CTS. Looking forward to seeing it at the New York show tomorrow. But with all of the top-flight luxury cars that have come out, the new Infiniti, Q50, the Lexus, Caddies, you know, it seems to me Lincoln is just falling further and further behind. And I just don't see them competing. You know, at what point does Ford pull the plug? Thanks, guys. Keep up the good work.
Well, they don't pull it yet. I mean, you know, we talked earlier in the show about the problems with the MKZ. Looks like they're getting that straightened out. Then we're going to quickly have the MKC, the small crossover. Then I think there's going to be several other refreshes, right? There's about four models coming in 4 years.
Yeah.
So let's see what happens in the marketplace as Lincoln rolls those out. I don't think Ford's anywhere close to pulling the plug on Lincoln.
They get the ROI for that big Super Bowl spend.
That's right.
No, they're committed. They're not going to, no plug pulling in the near future.
Yeah. Now, if in 4 years these new models don't work, yeah, then they'll pull the plug. But my bet is Ford recognizes it really has to make this brand work. So I think they're going to put a lot into doing just that. And I think there's a lot more questions here, but I'm trying to pull out the ones that are aimed primarily at the new Impala. Let's see. Scotty in Cleveland wants to know, as far as you know, Peter, is the design of the Cadillac LTS, he calls it, the CL, sticking close to the concept?
From what I saw, it did. But, you know, it's down to the details now. And if Captain Queeg's cost-cutting jihad doesn't hurt the car too badly, I think it'll be pretty good.
And here's an interesting one. Terry Barrett says, I'm a former Volvo employee, so it's tough for me to sit on the sidelines and watch Volvo slowly die since Ford sold it off. Do you believe that Volvo can survive? Can their strategy of sub-near luxury succeed, or is it doomed since people don't aspire to that?
They just announced today they're bringing in a station wagon back to the United States. So,
well, Vermont will be happy.
There you go. that northern tier of states there.
The land of Volvo wagons.
Yeah. No, but it's funny. You know, if you talk to the people at Volvo, corporate people, they don't think they're near luxury. They think they're luxury. And when you ask them that, I mean, they think you're insane for quibbling about whether they are or not. And isn't there some discussion now that they're going to move some production to China?
Right.
So, gee, doesn't that mean that they'd get a real good cost advantage?
Yeah.
So I don't see.
I would agree with him. It's a puzzle. Volvo's not doing well. I mean, they're not doing well in the American market. They're not doing well in the world market. And it's a puzzle. I think they've got a great brand image. I don't know anybody who's gone, oh, Volvo, I hate that brand. I've never met anybody. They may not aspire to buy the car, and that's maybe their problem. So to me, they've got more of a sales and marketing problem than
I think they began, and you'd probably have a better sense of this, Peter, but it seems to me that when they said, you know, we don't want to be known for safety. We want to be known for being stylish and cool, and we're gonna make, what was that movie, The Saint with... the forgettable Val Kilmer, you know, we're going to put him in a Volvo and he'll be raced. I mean, it just seems to me that as soon as they stopped standing for something, they stood for nothing.
Well, right. They fell back into whatever. But everyone else was pushing safety, too. I think they should have just stayed right where they were. And they decided, well, now we're going to be luxury and we're going to be desirable. And, you know, maybe people don't want their Volvos to be like that.
Maybe not, because the sales aren't working. Okay, we're going to end on this one question because it's the basics. We never talked about this. What's the price of the Impala?
So the base LS will start 27 and change. The LT with the V6 is just over 30, and the LTZ you can get into the mid 30s. But a lot of standard content. It's 10 standard airbags, nice disc brakes front and rear, large selection of tires and wheels, you know, 18, 19, and 20, a lot of optional safety content that we think we package in a way that just isn't content that you know, we're throwing at the car. It's lane departure warning, it's side blind zone, it's rear cross traffic, stuff that, you know, my wife and I use every day. So it's real good safety content, but you put that on a vehicle and you know, you price for it. So, but starts 27 and change and into the 30s.
So how much is the one that you're going to buy going to cost?
I like this, the LTZ loaded with adaptive cruise.
Good thing. Well, Todd Pollack, thanks so much for coming on AutoLine After Hours. Thanks especially for bringing your Impala in here with you.
Thanks for having me. Let me talk about the new 2014 Chevy Impala.
It's always nice to have the true believers who really
make it happen
on the show. Thank you.
Thank you.
Gary, great having you back.
Thanks, John.
Good being here. And Peter, as always, man.
Yep.
Good seeing you.
Another show.
I want to thank all of you for having tuned in. Oh, and one other thing, quick before we go, on AutoLine this week, our television program, we got this really cool program about how purchasing is moving to the cloud. If you've got anything to do with purchasing, logistics in this business, you're going to want to tune into that show. You can catch it on our website or check your public television listings. We're in over 50 markets across the United States and Canada. Anyway, folks, thanks for having tuned in.
AutoLine After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, your journey, our passion.
Visit our website, autoline.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday nights at 6 p.m. Eastern. Get your daily news fix with AutoLine Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with AutoLine This Week. There's all that and much more at autoline.tv.